the Civic Media Radio Network, moving Wisconsin forward one joke at a time. This is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And so it goes, and so it goes, and so it goes, and so it goes. But where it's going, no one knows. Hello, Wisconsin!
Now, filling in for the new mom, here's Jane Mattenair.
Good morning. Welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. Calvin is on the board, Greg Bach with me in studio. Just a reminder, every Wednesday, the new mom at 10:33 joins the show to give us an update on little Frankie Lou. I was going to see her yesterday, and then Kristen had a real busy day with other people stopping in. So this coming weekend is going to be my Francis weekend.
All right.
I'm very excited. Also very excited about our next guest. And actually, this was a listener who brought this organization to our attention. Harry Pulliam is the vice president of the Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network, and he is joining us now on the phone. Good morning, Harry.
How are you today?
Good, thank you. How about yourself?
I think I'm okay, thanks. I think I have I think I have a warm spot someplace.
Wow, well, that's good. Harry, tell us about Sustain Rural Wisconsin. And again, it was a listener who brought your organization to our attention and said, you need to talk to these people. So what is it that you do?
Well, Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network has been around for almost 10 years. We are a fairly loose-knit organization or coalition, if you will, of citizen groups around the state who are concerned with water quality and the adverse effects of industrial agriculture, industrial farming activities on public health and water quality.
So when you talk about the effect, are you talking about these CAFOs, these large animal operations?
We're talking, I think the term is typically called CAFOs, but you can pronounce it however you want to. A lot of folks don't even use the acronym. They just say factory farms. Sometimes they say industrial livestock operations. That's pretty much what we're talking about. That's the primary culprit in this situation.
Well, and for surrounding communities, I mean, how many animals are we talking about at some of these operations?
Well, just by state law, the typical CAFO, if you will, is about 750 dairy cows. They call it 1,000 animal units. If you're talking about hogs, it's like 2,500 hogs or 2,500 animal units. With chickens, it can be several thousand.
The biggest issue is what we do with the waste of all these animals, correct?
Exactly, that's the primary issue.
And what is the current?
Some of these
go ahead, Harry.
Some of these operations produce millions and millions of gallons of waste, and it is waste every year. There's an outfit called Pinnacle Dairy in outside of Broadhead, Wisconsin, Greene County, that produces 94 million gallons of manure every year from 5,800 cows sited on 127 acres of essentially wetlands. It's been tiled for years beside an already impaired stream. And they spread that manure over about 7,000 acres throughout about three counties.
Wow, that is really a lot to wrap your brain around.
It's hard to conceptualize that amount of manure.
Well, and that's not even. There's an article that I found from WPR. There was a proposal in 2019. A developer known as Cumberland LLC proposed an operation with 26,000 pigs.
Yeah. Matter of fact, that's still in the works. We've Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network and its affiliate groups have been successful for a couple, 3 years now in staving off that installation. It's currently under review. The permit was once denied because they didn't have. They have to have a certain number of acres to spread their manure on. Usually it's in contract. They don't own that land. They contract with farmers who take it as fertilizer. in so many cases, these operations say on paper that they have so many acres, but when you go back to the people whose land they're supposed to be spreading on, those people say, well, we never sign any paperwork. So it's been, sleight of hand, you know, but we've been able to stave it off for a while. There are several communities, I'd say five, six communities in northwestern Ohio and Pope Burnett County, where this Polk and Burnett counties, where these this one operation was planned on being sited, who have developed operations ordinances, not to say, no, you can't come, but, you know, if you come, you have to behave, and this is how you need to behave.
Just joining us, Harry Pulliam is our guest. He is the vice president of Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network, and they really focus on trying to keep our water clean and keep people engaged. Harry, I can't even imagine for people who live around these large farms, what do you hear from those folks?
Well, like I said, we've been hearing stories for years. Over in Kewaunee County, that's probably the poster child for the effects of industrial agriculture. They have far more animals than people in Kewaunee County, and there are people over there who were on the county board who had manure coming out of their faucets, groundwater coming out of their faucets.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Really. And I've seen pictures. I can send you pictures. You
know? Can I just believe you? I don't have to.
Well, you can certainly believe me.
I don't need to see pictures.
All this stuff is backed up by data. It's not like it's scare-tastic tactics. You know, we're trying to let the general public know. And generally, you know, folks in urban areas, they don't think about it because, you know, if you have a problem with a well in an urban area, I mean, everybody goes crazy. They crush it down the well. They move people's water supplies other places. They pipe in water from someplace else. But the folks in rural areas, if they have a problem with their well, for instance, in Emerald, Wisconsin, which is in St. Croix County, right across the Emerald Town Hall, is right across the street from Emerald Sky Dairy, which is a major CAFO. Their nitrates in their water, which are allowable at 10 parts per million, are now over 50. Folks around the state are having that kind of problem every day.
Well, and it's certainly, dairy is a critically important industry in this state, and I don't think anybody wants us to lose more dairy farms. But when you're talking about numbers like this one that was proposed for these pigs in Polk and Burnett counties, 26,000 animals, how can you even care for this number of animals in the way that's required for them to be healthy?
Well, that's another question. It's something that we don't necessarily concern ourselves, although we're concerned about it. We don't necessarily work on animal rights or animal welfare questions, but there are so many other things that we need to address. But that certainly is a concern.
Well, if someone is listening and they would like to get involved, Harry, what could they do?
What I would suggest folks do is go to our website, which is sustainruralwisconsin.org, and take a look. We have a nice website with lots of information. We have, I like to direct people to this area of the website called Reality Check. And that's a series of about 30, 31 slides that you can scroll through that explain. They have pictures, and they explain at the top what the industry calls something and what it actually is.
What examples can you share with us, Harry?
Oh, gee whiz, trying to think off the top of my head. well, concentrate. you'll have a picture of as far as the eye can see, you see hogs. And they'll say, concentrate animal feeding operation. What does that tell you? But at the very bottom of the picture, it'll say, you know, thousands of hogs in confinement in situations where they can't even turn around.
I am looking at the website right now, that section, and holy cow.
Or holy pig.
Holy pig. Holy.
Well,
Holy oinkers.
Yeah, you're so true, you know. And then there are what we found and why this organization got off the ground, I think, is that so often small communities are beset with these installations planning to come in, and they don't have a clue how to deal with it. They're concerned, they're worried, they've read about other situations, other parts of the state, but they don't have a frame of reference on how to address it. What's the first thing I need to do to protect myself and my family? And so they can go to the website. There are a whole series of suggestions on ways what you can begin to do, who you can contact, and how you can try to protect your family.
Boy, and we need to figure out something else to do with manure. I
mean,
well, yeah, we do. Historically, you were talking about numbers of farms. We lose about a farmer and a half a day.
A day still.
And what's happening is the industry is being encouraged by the federal government, actually, to concentrate, to get bigger and bigger farms and more confinement. Historically, I mean, you see these pictures of red barns and the cows on pasture and so forth, and some folks still do that. I was at a farm yesterday in Greene County where they have 40 or 50 cows, and that's how they do it. And the cows are healthier. They last longer. They had their milking cows that are 12 years old, whereas in a CAFO, they're lucky if they live to 3 or 4.
Seriously?
Wow. I mean, honestly, by looking at the pictures in the Reality Check Project, that doesn't surprise me.
No, not really. Yeah, it's really so big. But you know, so we're getting fewer and fewer farms, but we're not losing numbers of cattle. And what we're hollowing out rural communities, because you know, generally one of these big operations comes in and says, "Gee whiz, we're gonna employ all sorts of people. We're gonna spend all our money locally. It'll be a boon to your economy." Well, actually, they buy all their inputs from someplace else, some other large outfit.
Harry, hang on for 1 second. We got to go to a break. We just got a couple of minutes in the break. If you can stick with us, I'd really appreciate it for another segment.
Not a problem.
Excellent. You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin. Stay with us. Harry Pulliam will be back with us when we come back. You're listening on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
Talk about an uphill battle.
Good morning. Welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. 20 minutes past 11 o'clock. Jane Matnier in for Kristen Bry, Calvin on the board, Greg Bach with me in studio, and joining us on the phone, he is the Vice President of Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network. Harry Pulliam is here talking about trying to keep our water clean, and good heavens, what do we do? We're drowning in manure. Harry, some of the numbers that you gave when we were talking at the beginning of the other segment, just about one operation that's had about 1,700 cattle and yet had almost 100 million gallons of manure from those 1,700 cattle on an annual basis. That just blows my mind.
Well, in actuality, they have 5,800 cattle on 127 acres.
Okay, 5,800. 5,800
milking, 5,800 cattle on 127 acres. Place looks like a small city.
I bet. And as you said before we came up to the break, these companies come in and make all of these promises, which unfortunately just don't seem to come to fruition.
Well, you look around Wisconsin, and we used to have very thriving small communities, you know, 400 or 500 people, 1,000 people, 1,200 people. And some of them are just ghost towns now. There might be a gas station, there might be a dollar store, but they're not nearly what they used to be. I live outside New Glarus, Wisconsin. My wife and I farm organically. And Nuclearis back in the 50s had three car dealerships, three or four implement dealers, two clothing stores, three grocery stores, with about the same population as now. But in 1960s, they decided, wow, everything's going to the devil here. We can't make any money. So they went to the tourist route, and they Swissified everything. And now we see, half a million people come through the town every year. But not a lot of communities have that situation.
Sure.
And you see what's happening. So the big operations buy all their equipment. They import labor from, in many cases, from other countries. And they don't buy stuff locally. So it's just a sap on not only on the environment, but on the community that they're supposed to be supporting.
Well, and this pressure to constantly get bigger just seems counterintuitive to me.
Mm-hmm.
It does.
Well, it's kind of counterintuitive to a lot of people. When you think of farming, you think the red barn with a few cows out in the pasture, and people's happy, and the house is well painted, and that's not the case anymore in most cases. The push to get bigger. There's a big ag lag, ag lobby, folks in Congress and in the administration, in many cases, believe what they have to say about the direction of the industry, and it's hollowing out rural communities.
Harry Pulliam is our guest. He is the vice president of the Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network. I really encourage you to go to their website, sustainruralwisconsin.org. Go to the CAFO toolkit. And then go down to the Reality Check Project. Greg had mentioned this. There is just some horrifying pictures on there, Harry.
Well, I think that's it's intentional because people get a glossy view. There's a narrative out there that technology is going to benefit us, and we can overcome all the problems related to industrial agricultural technology, and that's simply not true.
844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY, if you want to check in. The money in politics is making our lives so much worse in so many different ways.
Yeah.
When you talk about these lobbying groups, Harry, and this push to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's terrifying. And yet we're losing our little farmers. We're gaining these massive operations. And yet at the same time, as you mentioned, Harry, we're hollowing out these little communities.
Yep.
Well, that's so true. And now the industry has, I call it the industry, has taken a different tack. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce is an industry group, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
They have a fairly newly active litigation group, they call it. So basically, right now they're in the process of suing the DNR on the behalf of the Wisconsin Dairy Alliance, which is a group of CAFOs. A very small group, actually, I think about six, some of them major polluters already. And the Wisconsin Dairy Alliance, Wisconsin Farm Bureau, by the way, suing the DNR to tell them that you don't have the right to require permits for these operations. And just recently, as I mentioned earlier in the earlier segment, that there's a small group of small towns in northwestern Wisconsin in Polk and Burnett counties have instituted operations ordinances to say, no, we're not saying you can't come here, but you have to do things like submit plans for preventing infectious diseases, air pollution and odor, managing waste and handling dead animals, traffic and property value impact studies, surety for cleanup and decommissioning of an outfit if it happens to go out of business, and a permit fee. And Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, on behalf of some folks locally who don't even own farms, are suing these towns, saying that their operations ordinances are contrary to state law. They are what's called slap suits. They're efforts to keep small communities from protecting themselves.
Yep. We talked about those before, yeah.
Well, and we've got just a couple of minutes left before we have to go to break, Harry. Again, if we don't have clean water to drink and we're going to get poisoned from the water that's contaminated with manure, you have no one to sell your milk to.
That's one way of looking at it.
Brilliant, Jane. Brilliant.
Again, if you're going to poison your own customers, this seems like a bad business model.
Well, you know, I don't want to wax poetic here or philosophical, but so often in big business, the concern for the general public is not paramount.
Harry Pulliam is the vice president of the Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network. I highly encourage you to check out their website. We will post it along with the show notes at the end of the show. Harry, thank you so very much for joining us. We will have to have you back and keep us in the loop. Anything we should know about. Thank you so very much.
Take care of yourself.
You too. Take care.
Thank you, sir.
Stay with us. I see you. We got a couple people hanging on the line with some questions about farms. If you can stay with us through the break, that would be great. We are coming back right after the news. You're listening to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. Jane Matinair in for Kristen Bry. Greg Mock, Carol King with me live in the studio and joining us now. So glad to have him with us. Investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, John Dietrich, is here. Good morning, John. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you all doing?
Really, really good. Well. What an excellent, excellent piece that you have about gun deaths in Wisconsin. The headline, gun deaths are rising in Wisconsin. Suicide in rural areas are a big part of the picture. I'm always impressed by the effort that goes into an investigative piece like this. How long does this take you, John?
Well, in this case, and thank you very much for the great intro and comments. This piece was, I did this through the Marquette O'Brien Fellowship for Public Service Journalism. This is an opportunity where journalists can take the better part of a year to really dig into this. And so I was at Marquette. I had some students that were working with me on this. And so I literally left the journal Sentinel starting last summer at the beginning of the school year, and had office over there in the support of Marquette. We worked on this. There's various aspects of it, the reporting naturally, but also a big data collection effort. And that took a year to do.
Well, and I just want to impress, that's why journalism is so important. And that's why local journalism is crucial, because in order to really get at some of this stuff, you have to have the bodies to and give them the time to do this. And that doesn't happen for nothing. It doesn't.
Okay, so John, what's the baseline? Give us the brass tacks of exactly what's happening here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, so I think the story sort of starts off with the question of, like, what do you think of when you think of gun deaths? And I've been covering, I've been a reporter at the Journal Sentinel for 20 years, and so I've written a lot of these stories. But, what people's idea usually goes to issues about homicide. And particularly City of Milwaukee homicides, which is important and are happening. I'm not trying to diminish those. This project seeks to elevate and reveal new categories and not suppress others. But homicide is one. Accidental shootings or negligent shootings or police shootings are another category. And taken together, those do not even come to a third of the gun deaths in Wisconsin. That's 71 out of 100 gun deaths every year are suicide. And while those circumstances are importantly different between a suicide and a homicide, it's important to consider them together. As Sarah Kolbeck from the Medical College said, while it's important to understand the differences, what this does is this opens up an idea that gun deaths are affecting everyone across our state in different ways. And when you adjust for population, Milwaukee is actually not the top county for per capita gun deaths in the state. And so just that fact was new. And I've covered this issue for a while, not that I know everything by any means, but it was new information. And as I'm hearing from readers, that's a new category for them as well.
John, what is the top county for gun deaths in Wisconsin?
It's Iron County and Rusk County. There's a series of small counties that are in the northern part of the state that the Native American population is large. The suicide rate is super high there. And, you know, I think it's really important when coming in, and I should have said this at the top, but in all the discussions I'm doing about this, I think it's really important that we know that if you're hearing this now and this is a category for you and you're concerned or you're feeling suicidal, dial 988. That's the phone number, the national phone number and here in the state to call and get help. It's really, really important to emphasize that as well. But yeah, it's those smaller counties that people might not think of in terms of gun deaths. And I've looked at the data from places like Iron County and Rusk County and others. I mean, it's all suicide. And so what we were asking for was gun deaths from every county in the state. We got them from 71 of the 72 counties. And what we wanted to do was help people, you know, kind of give a snapshot while also protecting people's privacy.
Sure.
And not exploiting really terrible situations, but helping people kind of understand and pulling back a little bit the curtain on something that we don't traditionally write about suicide very often. And so that creates maybe an impression among some that it's not as frequent, and it is super frequent.
I got to be honest with you. I have a very dear. I live in Ozaukee County, and I have a very dear friend who was a cop, and he was telling me about Ozaukee County, and I was shocked at the number of suicides that he said that he got called to, and it was all gun. And I was just, you know, in little, you know, here I am, little Ozaukee County queen. And it was just unbelievable to me, the stories he was telling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Ozaukee County data did really, really jump off. And when you think about the lack of homicides in some of these areas, like I said, it really dominates. And again, you know, firearms, I should say at the outset, the majority of people that I talked to for this project were gun owners. So I think then we can talk a little bit more about kind of what I learned in those discussions. But what our efforts were and what we're calling the project is Behind the Gun. And that works on two levels. One is to see the data behind the gun. And more importantly, in my opinion, is to see the humanity behind the gun, to see the people who are victimized or have died, have suffered in this way, whether they be the person who actually was struck by a bullet or family members, and also gun owners themselves, who I learned were just a varied lot. And we can talk about that. But yes, it is it was surprising to me when I saw the data. Again, firearms are the most common means that result in a death and suicide. And it's not that gun owners themselves, there's no data to suggest that gun owners by the fact that they own a gun are more prone to mental health problems or crises. But it's that when those things come up, which they do come up for all of us to some degree, the means by which somebody might have to act on an impulsively very dark thought it's very deadly with a firearm because without getting into too many details around means, because that can be, problematic as well for our audience. But I would just say that firearms are the most lethal.
How?
And they're not reversible.
John Dietrich is our guest. He's an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we're talking about his recent piece in the paper about gun deaths on the rise in Wisconsin with suicide in rural areas, a big part of the picture. And I just want to reiterate what you just said, John, about gun owners are not inherently more suicidal or more likely to have crises, but it is the immediacy of having that weapon there and its efficiency that is really more of the issue, right?
That's right. And it's when you look, it's the most common means, and it's also the most lethal means. 90% of people who attempt. It's really important too. One thing that I heard, just side note here, is that sometimes you hear this comment that if somebody wants to die by suicide, they will. And certainly there are cases where that has happened, but the data doesn't really support that. And let me just explain. If somebody attempts and does not die by suicide, of those 10 people, one will go on to die by suicide in a subsequent attempt, one, so 10%. However, if that first attempt is a means like firearms, it's unlikely there's going to be a second or a survival
and a second attempt.
So it's just important to know, and that's one of the things that people like Gene Papalia, who is a retired Madison cop, told me about, and Debbie Trader, who's in Wausau, and Sarah Kolbeck here at the medical college. They all really felt important that that's one of the public service things that we could convey, that means matter, and that conversation is happening among gun owners. That was a surprise to me, that I did not realize the communication among gun owners. There really isn't a gun community. That was one of the things I discovered. There's a lot of people who own this object who have very sort of different views.
Sure.
But within that group, they are very concerned about this. And there are new conversations that are happening, including at gun shows, including at different places, that one might be surprised where they want the issue. These people who sort of have bravely stepped forward in what I think is going to be a movement of talking about mental health among gun owners. And there's barriers to folks getting mental health all across the board. And it seems particularly acute among some gun owners that I talk to.
Well, and in the rural areas, there's just mental health deserts all over the place. Right. And that just makes it worse. And again, I want to reiterate 988. 988 is the national number to call if you are having suicidal ideation or anything like that.
Okay, now this is, it's not, this is, we're seeing the numbers rise in Wisconsin, but it's a national issue, obviously. Did you do any case-by-case comparison of the states, of other states, as to what's happening in their areas?
Yeah, so I did look at the CDC numbers, and so what generally, okay, so 71% of our gun deaths are suicide in Wisconsin. That's running about 10 to 12 points over the national average. But again, the national average is really, I mean, it's a big number. You're blending together 50 states. It can be misleading, but it is trending higher here. We're not the highest. There are counties or states out west, like Utah, like Wyoming, like Colorado, where they have very, very low homicide rates and very high suicide rates. In fact, in Utah, the number in some years was up around 90%. They have almost no homicide, but the suicide numbers are really high. It was really interesting, the approach that was taken in Utah. Them inviting in some public health people, a very conservative state, inviting in people from Harvard to help them kind of tackle this issue and think about some public health and public information campaigns that could be useful. And then there's other states where you're seeing much lower, but you're exactly right. The number of suicides are definitely climbing, and we see in Wisconsin for the first time last year, more than 500 people died by gun suicide. The overall number of gun deaths has essentially doubled from 2004. That is driven partially by suicide, also partially by homicide. And I don't want to forget about accidents and police shootings, but just to keep in mind, those are like 1 and 2% of the total. Now, there's a reason why we in the media and the public in general notice those, because of the circumstances, and in case of accident could be just incredibly, especially tragic victims. But the drivers of the big numbers are suicides, and those are hitting disproportionately hard, especially white males over the age of 50.
John Diedrich is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Recently has an excellent piece in the paper about the number of gun deaths in Wisconsin, and especially looking at the suicide aspect of that. If you have a question for John, you can text it in at 844-967-2789. Coming up next, John, I do want to ask you, and I thought it was so interesting when you mentioned as well that these discussions about suicide are coming up more at gun shows and among gun owners themselves, about some of the people that you spoke with who said they have taken the weapons of some of their friends for a period of time when they felt vulnerable.
Right, right.
And so we'll talk more about that. That's all coming up next. Stay with us. You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, and we're on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. 10 minutes before 11 o'clock. Jane Matner in for Kristen Bry, Carol Kane, Greg Bach in studio with me. And joining us, an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, John Diedrich, is here talking about his article about the number of rising gun deaths in Wisconsin, and especially focusing on suicide in rural areas. And Greg, we had a guest in yesterday that also kind of ties into this whole discussion.
We had the executive director of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin, Monique Minkins, and she was telling us that a new report that they just released was that there was 96 domestic violence, 96 murders attributed to domestic violence, half rural, half urban, but a majority of them by gun. And I was wondering if you could speak to anything about that with regard to your research and what you found as far as domestic violence and the use of guns.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Let me say at the front end, we happen to have a fantastic investigation dropping just today from Ashley Lutheran, who's a colleague of mine at the Journal Sentinel, about this issue. And it looks not only at the victims, the primary victims, but also the children that are affected, who have been, lost parents in this process. And Ashley has a really interesting new look at the way, the way that issue is playing out. She has written really importantly about domestic violence for years and years now. One thing that is, again, is really important to remember in, firearms, not only in suicides are the most lethal, but in homicides, and they're the most common weapon. And I mean, it sort of makes sense because they are designed, as one person that I, you know, interviewed, he said these were not designed to shoot cans or targets. They are used for that, and people use them for target shooting and so forth. But they were designed to kill people and animals. Animals and people, depending on which order you happen to be in, so forth. But that's what this instrument is. So they are very effective at doing what they do. So when impulsive situations come up that may be conflict, like a domestic violence situation, a firearm really elevates things. And that's why when somebody's talking about an intervention around suicide or around a possible homicidal situation, one of the first questions is always about, are there firearms in the home?
Right.
And does the person have access to them? Access is a really key thing, because if there is some distance that can come between the strong feeling, whether that be a homicidal feeling or a suicidal feeling, space and time is your friend in that case. And when you can create space and time, some of those thoughts can go down, and the impulsive thoughts can go down. It's that when the firearm is really accessible, easy to get to, and something is happening, that's when things that are horrifically tragic are happening.
If you or someone you know are having suicidal thoughts, you are in crisis, even if you just have questions about, am I in crisis? 988 is the national number to call. Reach out for help. Talk to people. John, you said that over the course of your investigation, you found that among gun owners now there's more discussion about this, and even some who have taken their friends' guns when they felt they shouldn't, when the gun owner felt they should not be around their own weapons, right?
That's true. And there is a sort of phenomenon, if you will. I don't know if that's the right term, but it's something that happens among gun owners. It's fairly typical. And I was talking to a researcher from Harvard, Kathy Barber, and she had never heard about this until she did some work. And it was sort of interesting. I mean, she's like a non-gun owner, so she wouldn't necessarily know this. But among gun owners, it's fairly typical that gun owners will hold guns for friends and family in times of distress. Some estimates now are that 30% of gun owners report doing this. And we have some more coverage coming in this project, and we're looking at some of those questions. But like everybody I talk to, like every gun owner that I talk to, knew about this.
Wow.
Like this happens regularly. And this is not government involvement. This is not a red flag thing. I mean, that's a different thing. And it's an important question. But this is grassroots, like somebody saying, hey, I need separation from this gun right now. And actually our first story in this project was in August. We published something on what's called the Gun Shop Project. And what that allows is a place where if somebody doesn't have a friend or family member that they could bring a gun to for temporary safekeeping during times of distress, that gun stores are opening up. There's 40 gun stores in Wisconsin. And again, this is a voluntary effort. This is not government involved and so forth. This is gun stores stepping up and saying, hey, we want to be that location. That's really important too. In a state, we don't have a universal background check,
right?
But in states that have universal background checks, you would have to, if I were to transfer to somebody else, or a gun owner would transfer to somebody else, they would have to do a background check. And so that's one of the hurdles that is being said. Like let me just be clear. This also though depends upon the person who's in the crisis to be of a mind enough to be able to do this.
Right.
But that actually happens. And as Emmy Betts from Denver said, she's a researcher in this area, she said, we always have to start with the voluntary in mental health. It does not respect the patient's sovereignty and their decision-making to go to involuntary means. And our systems are set up to be rare, that we rarely take away people's freedoms, like, you know, like a temporary detention or something like that, that we're always trying to invite them into care. And that's what we're seeing right now in the gun, among gun owners that I talk to, is that, hey, let's come out and be more proactive. And I even saw that there was a gun show in Milwaukee in September, and there was a group that has formed to try to bridge this gap between gun owners and the mental health community. To say, hey, let's not be the tough guys or women. Let's start talking about mental health, and let's just talk about, you know, what's happening with the suicide issue with this thing that we love. They love firearms, and they want to make sure that they are respecting them and being smart when times get difficult.
Thank you so much for joining us, John. It's a wonderful, wonderful article, and I highly encourage everyone to read it. We will put it in our show notes end of the show. And anytime you have anything else that you're working on and you want to join us, please just let me know. We would be delighted to have you back. Again, that number, 988. If you are having thoughts, if you are having a crisis, take advantage of it. And stay with us. You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.